Dit was 'n bekende een van Freshly Ground. Things have changed.
The Honest Truth with Benito Vergatini. Smile 90.4 FM.
Joining us in conversation to walk us through the 2022 Employer's Guide on how best to navigate our new world of work is Associates of Employment Law at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyer, Dylan Bushier. Mr. Bushier, good evening and thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening and thank you very much for having me.
Do employers need to get one's consent, an employee's consent, to implement a hybrid working model?
So I think the first thing we have to look at when considering this question is one of two things. If the contract of employment makes it has a term and condition which both parties have signed as they've entered into an agreement, to consider whether a hybrid working model can be considered, because of course your workplace will be stipulated in your contract of employment, and having to then contract out of that, if they don't get consent, if it's a term and condition, then of course. Then they would require the consent, because that's an agreement that's been entered into by both parties. However, on the other hand, if it's not a term and condition of employment and it's simply a work practice being something that the employer has implemented without it being contractually agreed to, and that all the employees have practiced over time, then no consent may be required for that. If, for example, it is a term and condition of employment, then failure to secure that consent could result in a unilateral change to the employee's terms and conditions of employment, which then could expose the employer to a claim for an automatically unfair dismissal if they dismiss the employee for failing to agree to that hybrid and remote working model. So in summary, yes, hybrid and remote working model will require consent if it's a term and condition of employment, but it won't require consent if it's a work practice, as the employer can simply change that practice and inform the employee.
What does an employer do when employees refuse to return to the office this year, for example, Dylan? I mean, on what basis can an employee lawfully refuse to return?
So I think we have to start by looking at the statutory guidelines that have been provided to us by the government. And more specifically, the Consolidated Direction on Occupational Health and Safety Measures in Certain Workplaces. This is the main directive that was introduced in 2021 in June. And of course, that directive indicates that employers must conduct a risk assessment of the workplace. And so if they have conducted the risk assessment of the workplace and they've implemented the appropriate measures to ensure that they meet their statutory obligation for a safe and healthy working environment and to ensure the health and safety of employees, and they've implemented such appropriate measures such as social distancing, sanitizing, vaccination policies, and ensuring that employees specifically wear PPE equipment. And if they've implemented that and they've met the requirements in terms of the directive, then of course the employer can be entitled to call on employees to return to the office. But of course, we look again, if the contract of employment stipulates an employee's place of work and the employee unreasonably refuses to return to that stipulated place of work in their contract, then they may be in breach of their contract of employment, as we mentioned earlier, and the employer may institute disciplinary action against that employee. And further, an employee who then fails to adhere to a reasonable and lawful instruction that is given to by an employer to return to the contractually agreed workplace, they may be found guilty also of insubordination, and insubordination in labor law is a form of misconduct. And of course, a form of misconduct may result in dismissal. However, employees have the right to refuse to return to the workplace if they have a legitimate and objective reason to believe that the workplace poses a threat to their health and safety. So ultimately, employers should be assessing the reasonableness of the employee's concern, and eliminate that risk if there is that ability to do so. And once that health and safety threat has been remedied, a continued refusal then would amount to insubordination. So again, I mean, if the employer is meeting all the requirements in terms of directives, then they can make that reasonable instruction to return to the office.
I see. Dylan Bushier is Associate of Employment Law at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyer, helping us understand the 2022 Employer's Guide. There's been lots of talk around mandatory vaccination policies, and we've seen some companies make headway towards that. What is the process if an employer wants to implement a vaccination policy? What is the steps that needs to be undertaken?
So as I mentioned earlier, the directive is the guiding document at the moment. It's a statutory directive that is issued by the government. And so, of course, firstly, what they would have to do is identify, firstly, to implement mandatory vaccination policy in January 2022 and onwards, employers will have to firstly do their risk assessment, as mentioned earlier. And if they do that risk assessment, what they ultimately will be identifying is the employees who fall within that identified categories that must be vaccinated, and inform them of the measures that will be implemented with regards to the vaccination policy. They would need to, there's various other steps such as consulting stakeholders, consulting unions, consulting employees when they're implementing this, policy. And so further to that, they must also provide electronic support to assist any of their employees to register on the COVID-19 portal, to provide them with information regarding vaccination, and to provide them with any information that is set out in the policy that will guide them through what is required of them. Further to that, and I think this is the most contentious part that has been discussed over the last 6 months, is that is regarding vaccinations and objecting to a vaccination. And so there must be that process that's set out in that policy, which sets out how they can object and what that exemption process may include. For example, it will set out that it will be allow employees to submit objections or applications for exemptions to being vaccinated on constitutional or medical grounds. And then what the employer will then do is consider those exemption applications and make a decision from there. And in addition to that, to implement this policy, there isn't a responsibility on the employer to provide employees with information on the nature and benefits of the vaccinations, as well as any information on the risks or side effects, you know, such as allergic reactions or what steps they can take if they've had bad side effects from the vaccination, such as the scheme that's been put in place by the government where claims can be made if the proof can show that the vaccination had a negative effect on the employee. So those are some of the steps that the employer will be required to consider when they are drafting that policy before they implement it. And, you know, in addition to that, you know, it's not only that they must introduce the policy, but in the directive, it sets out the measures that the employer must implement to mitigate this risk of an outbreak of COVID-19 in the workplace once they do return from the holiday period into January 2022. And some of these measures, just for the information of any employees listening, is an employer can send a communication to everybody, all the employees ahead of the festive season, encouraging them to adhere to all the health and safety protocols. Of course, the festive season has come to an end, so you know you would hope that your employees would have adhered to that. And so those are some of the measures that can be taken to ensure that the employees are fully aware of what is required of them in terms of the policy, and that the employer can show that they've met what the step-by-step requirements set out in the directive, so that they may introduce this policy. So just in summary, they start by doing a risk assessment, consulting various stakeholders, considering all the elements I've mentioned of the policy, and then they will start introducing the policy from there forward.
Dylan, does the directive also cover the issue around self-quarantining and remuneration?
Yeah, so it definitely speaks to self-quarantining, or at least quarantining when it comes to being, if the employee does get COVID-19. But ultimately, what will happen is where an employee can work from home while quarantining, then the employee may do so and will of course be entitled to their full salary in terms of their contract of employment.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody gets negative side effects. Some people are asymptomatic throughout their COVID-19 experience. However, there are other employees that will have bad side effects, and so maybe they won't be able to work. So their option there would be to then apply for sick leave, and so they would be remunerated if they have sick leave to their profile. And in cases where an employee is unable to work from home, then the employee will have to make use of their annual leave for the quarantine period. However, we all know that annual leave is limited in certain companies, and so once they've exhausted that leave, the principle of no work, no pay will apply, and the employee will be placed on unpaid leave. So that's how it currently stands in the position of labor law with regards to remuneration. But of course, the directive echoes what the Disaster Management Act has stated in terms of the requirement of employees to quarantine if they do test positive for COVID-19.
Dylan Bushier from Cliff Dekker Hofmeyer helps us understand the employee's guide to 2022 in our new world of work. Dylan, what are some of the flexible working models an employer can introduce this year, do you think?
So what they can introduce this year, of course, is the new, I mean, we all understand it as the new norm. That is, of course, working from home and creating an office space within your home, and you can then you can interact with your clients via Microsoft Teams or Zoom. You can, of course, do your work via email, and you can correspond with your principals and your line managers in that way. And so in this sense, the digital revolution, I think, is definitely driving new forms of employment, facilitated by various online platforms, as I mentioned. But, you know, remote and hybrid working arrangements will allow employees to work from home and attend the traditional workplace office intermittently, so they can go in and out as they please. Of course, that might not apply to certain industries. If you're a nurse or a doctor, that wouldn't be possible because, of course, you need to attend to your patients directly. And with the flexible working models, I all understand that typical employment is a full-time employment for an indefinite period. But however, atypical working models which the employer can look to employ include temporary placements, fixed-term contracts, and variable hour contracts, a special form of part-time employment. So you've got your typical employment, and within your typical employment, you can adopt an online work-from-home approach. Alternatively, if that's not possible, then various atypical working models will work in this regard.
What do you think are some of the consequences associated with remote working and, as you describe, other atypical relationships?
Yeah, so of course, you know, the first thing is that the positive of negative consequences, that includes, because we're talking about atypical forms of work, they could include a lack of job security if you've got a fixed-term contract. And of course, there is the potential for excessive and improper use of these atypical forms of employment, such as keeping employees, for example, on renewed 3-month fixed-term contracts, for example. An employer then might feel that they can just cut that employee at the end of that extension or that renewal. Of course, employees do have recourse in terms of the Labor Relations Act. We can look at Section 186(1)(b), which speaks to a reasonable expectation of renewal and the like. So there are those recourses for employees, but that negative consequence does come with atypical forms of employment. When it comes to online and remote working, of course, we can just think of the typical negative consequences, such as maybe lack of access to internet, bad internet connection, which affects your ability to perform your work and the like. So those are the various negative consequences associated with remote working and other atypical forms of employment.
Where could our listeners read through the directive?
The directive is available. If you simply just type in the consolidated directive on Google, for example, you'll get various government websites which will have copies of that for all to access. It's a PDF document. It's for public accessibility. So that's where any citizen or anybody around the world can access our consolidated directive, which the government issued in light of this COVID-19 pandemic.
Dylan Bushier, Associate of Employment Law at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyer. Appreciate your time and helping us understand this. Dylan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, and have a great evening further. Thank you.
27 minutes.